My ongoing research about the pork issue during the early Republican period has actually two aspects. The first one concerns mostly the discursive level and concentrates on the publications against pork eating taboo in Islam. The second aspect is about the state's policies concerning the pig farming since the 1920s and state's own involvement in this activity during the 40s. My presentation today will be mostly limited to the discursive level of the pork issue, and I will give some brief information about the state's pig farming towards the end of my speech. Before starting to talk about the halal pork issue in more detail, I will give some very brief information on the political context and the state policies concerning religion during the early Republican period, that means from 1923 to 50. During this period, the Republican People's Party, the party established and led by Mustafa Kemal until his death in 1938, has governed the country and for most of this period as a single party. As for the policies concerning religion, the main objectives of the new regime are to reform Islam, to limit its public appearance, and to take it completely under the state's control. In 1924, the government abolished the caliphate, closed the madrasas, created the administration of religious affairs under the office of the prime minister. In 1925, it closed the dervish lodges and prohibited wearing of religious costumes except in places of worship. In 1927, it erased the state religion clause from the constitution. In 1928, it founded a council on religious reform. And in 1931, laicism was declared as one of the six principles of the single party. As a final note, I would like to underline the fact that with the abolishment of the office of Sheikhul Islam in 1924, the ulema establishment had no more control over religious publications and even over the translations of the Quran. The same year, the first three Turkish translations of the Quran are published, and none of the translators had professional training in Quranic disciplines. All these factors have prepared the conditions in which the halal pork debate has arisen. Let me now tell you in a chronological order how the halal pork debate occurs and develops. The first person who argues that Islam does ban pork eating neither completely nor forever is İsmail Hakkı Milaslı, a physician and an active modernist Islamist intellectual. He makes his interpretation public for the first time by publishing a book in 1923 in Istanbul, but in Arabic. His interpretation, Teskiyatul luhum fil Islam. That means teskiye of meats in Islam. I don't translate the word teskiye yet, because the main argument of the book is based on the translation and the interpretation of this word, as I will discuss in a more detail while talking about its Turkish translation published in 1933. In the same period, some other arguments against pork eating taboo arise as well. In 1925, Ahmet Nevzat Tüzdil, the ex-head veterinarian of Istanbul Slaughterhouse, published a series of articles about the parasites transmissible from animals to human beings in the official journal of the municipality of Istanbul. When it is about the pig's parasites, such as Tania solium and trichinosis, he explains that modern veterinary science is able to eliminate all of the possible health risks associated with the consumption of pork, and concluded that if Moses and Muhammad were living in our age, they would permit their community to appreciate pork. Nevertheless, Tüzdil seems to be prudent while he's talking about his quite radical reform proposal in religion. If my readers don't accuse me of going too far, he says. However, in 1927, in an interview published in Time, Tevfik Rüştü Aras, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, is astonishingly assertive in his words, while he is claiming that the pork avoidance taboo is vanishing in Turkey. Pork is a good food, one of the best. Religion may forbid it, but that idea will die with the older generation. Wild pork has been avoided with horror for generations as unclean. It is now being eaten by our younger generation. End of quotation. It's obvious that his declaration didn't reflect the reality of Turkey, and he was most probably aware of this contradiction. By evoking this striking example, his main objective seemed to be to emphasize the cultural westernization project of the new regime, to prove its transformative capacity, and to demonstrate the voluntary participation of the young generation in this project, even when it is about the issues that are extremely sensitive. Aras, who served as foreign minister for 13 years, was one of the most important names of the new regime. His ideas expressed in this interview make one suspect the presence of a tacit reform project, or at least that of an ongoing discussion among the power elites about the possible ways of promoting pork consumption in Turkey. I'd like to come back now again to the ex-veterinarian Tuzdil's way of reasoning, which indicates the potential health risks of pork consumption as the only reason of the religion's interdiction. This logic of causality is actually quite common in the text, both for and against the religion's ban over pork consumption. The earliest example that I can find is from an article published in 1883. By referring to some European sources, the author explains the potential dangers of trichinosis on human beings' health, and claims that scientists in the USA and in Europe are more and more against the pork consumption. He concludes that these health risks in pork revealed by modern science confirm the divine wisdom and rightness of Islam. I also find a very similar scientific justification of pork eating taboo in a book on Islam and science published in 1900. Referring to some Western medical sources, the author indicates discoveries concerning the disease related to pork consumption. It is still about mostly the parasites, as scientific reasons of the Islamic taboo. The author of this book is İsmail Hakkı Milaslı, the previously mentioned intellectual who argues for the first time that Islam does ban pork eating neither completely nor forever. However, the contradiction between his two books is not as dramatic as it appears at first glance. That is to say, in his both books, the priority of Milaslı is to demonstrate scientific proofs of the rightness of Islam. As he is constantly looking for cohesion between science and Islam, when he is convinced that the modern scientific methods can eliminate all the possible risks in pork, he simply starts to reread the holy book in order to reevaluate his interpretation. The arguments against the pork eating taboo in general and the contribution of Milaslı to this debate in particular seem to be very much related to the historical background of the Islamic reformism, especially two basic traces of Cemalettin el-Afghani and his followers' reformist perspective are visible in the formation of the halal pork arguments: the emphasis on the necessity of a reinterpretation of Islam and the search for a harmony between the scientific reason and the religion. Moreover, Milaslı, the pioneer figure of the halal pork debate, was closely connected to the intellectual milieu of Sebilur Reşat, an Islamist reformist journal that had published many articles by al-Afghani, Muhammad Abduh, and Rashid Rıza. Let me come back again to Milaslı's book on the myths in Islam. This book, published in 1923 in Arabic and translated into Turkish in 1933, is the most comprehensive publication which defends the abolition of the pork-eating taboo. Milaslı repeats and develops his arguments on this subject also in his later books. I will sum up and analyze what he says in these publications by highlighting three main points: his interpretation of Suratul Maida, his admiration to the material superiority of the Western countries, and finally, the raison d'etat in his argumentation. Milaslı argues that the first verse of Surat al-Ma'idah, which is the most quoted one on the Islamic prohibition of pork, is not understood correctly. You see in this image the Arabic original, English, and French translation of this verse. According to Milaslı, the exception explained starting with the word ille, translated as unless here in English, covers all kind of meats declared forbidden at the beginning of this verse, including lahmı hınzır, flesh of swine. Moreover, he claims that the expression of mazakkayutum, translated here as you are able to slaughter it, should be understood as you are able to purify it, purge its defects. As I have already shown, since the modern veterinary science's discovery of parasites in pork, there is already an almost common agreement about what the defects of pork are. Milaslı takes a further step here by accepting that modern scientific methods are now able to purge all these effects. So he concludes that there is no more reason to consider pork as haram. As for his admiration for the Western country's material superiority and its effect on his questioning on the pork eating taboo, I have an example from one of his books. Here, Milaslı describes a hypothetical situation. A Muslim is invited for a dinner by a foreigner from a civilized country who, of course, offers pork to his guest. Milaslı portrays some plausible dialogues between them in order to demonstrate that there is no way for the Muslim guest to explain why he doesn't eat pork without discrediting Islam in the eyes of his foreigner host. The host would certainly consider Islam as a religion in a complete contradiction with modern sciences, and as a religion that deprives its believers from pork, which is in fact a very important source of health and richness. According to Milaslı, if the verse in question is understood correctly, which means as he interprets it, Islam will certainly gain the respect and the admiration of the non-Muslims, and Muslims will be proud of their religion before the foreigners. The argumentation which prioritizes prioritizes the value of Islam in a foreigner's eye reflects clearly his self-orientalism. However, one must note that this self-orientalism and allergies to modern science and civilized world represent a clear inherent tension. It ultimately serves to prove and confirm the forgotten superiority of Islam. According to Milaslı, by prohibiting pork eating, Islam has protected its believers from more than 1200 years and predicted that the pork will one day be totally safe. And scientific developments now reveal the divine wisdom of the Holy Quran and hence prove the superiority of Islam above all other religions. Milaslı underlines that neither Judaism nor Christianity, the religion of the civilized world, had such a divine wisdom. The tension in this example between the acceptance of Western superiority and the desire to prove its own cultural national supremacy is of course not peculiar to Milaslı or to the early Republican period of Turkey, as it is depicted by various scholars that is actually very common in non-Western nationalisms and Westernization experiences. And finally, as for the raison d'etat in Milaslı's argumentation, I would like to highlight the traces of certain public nutrition concerns as a part of modern population policies in his questioning. On the pork eating taboo, not only Milaslı, but also other authors for the abolition of the taboo make comparisons between developed countries who consume pork and the poor ones who lack of sufficient food supply and still don't eat pork. With the invention or adaptation of the concept such as calorie and protein, the field of nutrition becomes increasingly a numerical and statistical area since the last decades of the 19th century. States seek to rationalize the relationship between nutrition and population. During the 19th century, many Western European countries start to look for cheaper protein sources in order to have healthier and stronger populations. It is very significant that some similar debates against the meat-eating taboo of Buddhism and Shintoism took place in the early Meiji period of Japan and among the nationalist milieu in late 19th century India. As for the pork thanks to the fertility and productivity of porkers, pork has gained more importance as a relatively cheaper source of protein. I think these developments also found their echoes in the writings of Milazzo. Even if he was not a bureaucrat or a politician, he was still prioritizing the achievement of the nation and trying to contribute to national interests. So the halal pork issue was not only a theological topic, also a political and economic one. Just before the conclusive remarks and by following the topic of national interest, I would like to note some basic points about the state's involvement in pig farming in 1940s, especially during the World War II, which deepens the food supply problem. Turkish state seems to be more and more attentive to the economic importance of pigs and wild swines. Turkish state, deprived of the use of swine flesh as a food supply because of its large Muslim majority population, looks for benefiting from this source mainly as an export product. Every budgetary law promulgated between 43 and 46 includes an item reserved for the cost for establishing agencies that will exploit the skins and meats of pigs and other animals. During this period, some of the state's production farms and state-owned sugar factories start raising pigs and sell them through newspaper advertisements. Even if the number of the porker raised in these farms has been multiplied during the 40s, pork production yet stays almost ignorable compared to the total meat production of the country. However, there is a visible discursive importance attributed to the pig farming. It is always presented as a national cause in the annual reports of the farms and in the state-sponsored publications, as it is very well demonstrated in the title of a book published in 1945 and written by an agricultural engineer, an important cause for our country, pig farming. To sum up, I claim that the halal pork debate appears at the crossroads of four main factors. First, the heritage of modern Islamic reformism. This heritage opens a legitimate space for the rise of the new interpretations of the Holy Book and Hadith, which takes social, political, and scientific developments very much into account. The westernization process can be counted as another factor, which drives the protagonist towards a self-orientalist perspective and hence to put their cultural habitudes in question by comparing them with the Western practices. The intention was obviously to find the formula of the success of Western countries in order to overcome their model. In the third place, one should take into consideration the politics of secularization in early Republican period, which enlarged the limits of radical modernist interpretations of Islam. In the case of halal pork, the government contributes this process implicitly by distracting the traditional ulema's power and more directly by taking an initiative in pig farming after the 40s. And last but not least, the developments in the field of nutrition research and the increasing importance given to the population policies during the period between the two wars bring the concepts such as protein, protein sources, and public nutrition into the agenda of the Turkish intellectuals. Economic development was also one of the main components of their perception of national interest. Pork meat and especially white swine flesh hence appear for them as a very fertile economic source. One should remember that most of the intellectuals become more and more ready to think within the raison d'etre during the single party period. Thank you for your attention. Yes, yes.